Well, brother, as I'm sure you're probably all aware, all of us in our individual Christian lives have our own personal struggles. And what I mean by that is, you know, we all have our own failings, our own faults and personal sins that we have to struggle with to overcome, to, you know, to try to develop the character of God and Jesus Christ in our own lives and to try to model Jesus Christ's example. You know, and those struggles that we go through tend to be unique to each individual. And what I mean by that is, you know, we all have our own unique backgrounds and our own strengths and weaknesses, our own personalities. So we tend to struggle with various issues, and not everybody struggles with the same faults. But as we're going to see today in the sermon, the Bible tells us there's one particular area that pretty much all of us tend to fall short in. We all tend to have struggles with, and if it's something that if we don't get under control, can really kind of negate every other area that we've been successful at. And what I'm referring to is when it comes to taming our tongues. In other words, you know, keeping our tongue under control so we don't sin with our mouth. We don't say things that we shouldn't say. Either speaking out, you know, in anger and lashing out and saying things that we regret, or just, you know, letting our carnality get to us and saying inappropriate things or sharing things that we shouldn't share with others. You know, it's an area that all of us tend to fall short in one way or another. So what we're going to do today in the sermon is to look at what the Bible says about taming our tongues, you know, and keeping ourselves from sinning with our mouths. So if you'd like a title for this sermon, it's Taming the Tongue. Again, Taming the Tongue. And to start off with, let's turn over to James chapter 3. Because we'll see here, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, James tells us that this is pretty much an area that all of us fall short on. You know, regardless of what our background is or, you know, what our, you know, individual personality is and strengths and weaknesses, when it comes to taming our tongues, we all tend to fall short. So let's start off in James chapter 3 in verse 1. It says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing you shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. And anyone who does not stumble in word is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." See, he directly says here, you know, we all have our individual struggles, and again, those tend to be unique depending upon our personal backgrounds and our personalities and, you know, individual strengths and weaknesses. But when it comes to keeping our tongue under control, that tends to be an area that all of us are lacking in one way or another. So picking up in verse 3, "Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest fire a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a word of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." In other words, again, it's an area that we all tend to fall short in one way or another. In verse 9, "With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursings, my brethren. These things ought not to be. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring can yield both salt and water and fresh." He's saying, you know, unlike these other things in nature, you know, the tongue can accomplish great good and can do great evil as well. In fact, the book of Proverbs warns us, if we don't tame our tongues, it can be the source of destruction to our own lives, and also can be a source of destruction to others that we know. In other words, it can cause damage to others, to innocent bystanders. And to see this, turn over to the book of Proverbs. It's Proverbs chapter 13. And we'll see here in verse 3 how our tongues can be our own doom. says, he who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. In other words, just to kind of put it in modern day terminology, you know, the person who doesn't know when to shut up, you know, when to tame their tongue, you know, that can be the source of their own personal destruction. But see, it can not only be a source of destruction for our own lives, it can also be something that destroys the lives of our friends and neighbors, you know, of other people that we know, simply because, you know, we shoot our own mouths off, you know, to put it in modern day terminology, we can wind up doing great damage to other people. And to see that, turn over to Proverbs chapter 11, and we'll read here in verse 9. It says, the hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. So we can see it can be very important for us, if we're going to live a Christian life and follow the example of Jesus Christ, one of the things we've got to get under control is controlling our tongue. You know, knowing when to shut up or just to restrain ourselves, you know, to not lash out in anger, to not say things that we shouldn't say, to not share things that we shouldn't share, you know, that it should be kept confidential. And we'll see as we go through this sermon, you know, these are all issues that the Bible addresses. Because see, we started off in the book of James, and if you turn back over to the book of James, we'll see here what he directly tells us. That if we don't tame our tongues, you know, it can pretty much negate every other area that we've successfully overcome in. And see this, turn over to James chapter 1. And we'll read here in verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart. And this one, religion, is useless. See, it's a very serious issue, and we're going to see later in this sermon, you know, that the sins that we can commit with our tongues, you know, oftentimes we think of that as more of a minor offense, but we're going to see that God classifies it, you know, right up there in the same category with murder and, you know, adultery and sexual immorality and other, you know, serious sins that we tend to, you know, again, see as very, you know, very severe, you know, horrible sins. Well, the things that we can, you know, do with our mouths, you know, just not being able knowing when to keep our mouths shut, God classifies those sins in the same category, and we'll see that later in this sermon. Now, one of the areas where we typically tend to fall into, you know, transgressing with our mouths, you know, not appropriately keeping our mouths shut, is what we oftentimes refer to in our modern day terminology as gossip. In engaging in gossip, or even facilitating gossip, as we're going to see here. Now, the Bible oftentimes uses a different term for this, particularly in the Old Testament. You'll oftentimes see the term a talebearer. Again, that's not a term that we typically use in our modern day English. Again, we oftentimes refer to someone who's a gossip or a busybody, you know, but we won't tend to use the term talebearer. But as we're going to see when we dig into what, you know, the Bible means with the term talebearer, it covers a number of concepts that, again, we tend to kind of put under the category in modern-day terminology of a gossip. And to see this, turn over to Leviticus chapter 19. So Leviticus chapter 19. And we're going to see here that Moses, you know, passes on instructions from God here. In terms of, again, what we would typically refer to as gossip, you know, in our modern day terminology, he's going to refer to it as a talebearer. But what we're going to see here is he covers it from both angles. And what I mean by that is it's not just the individual who actively engages in the gossip, you know, in gossiping about other people. It's also a prohibition that we shouldn't facilitate it or even stand by idly, you know, and basically enable others who are gossiping. And to notice this, let's look in Leviticus 19 in verse 16. It said, you shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the wife of your neighbor. I am Jehovah. Now, as we're going to see as we go through this sermon, in the Old Testament, the word talebearer is used a number of times. And But however, even though it's always the same word in English, in Hebrew there are three different words that are oftentimes translated as talebearer, and they have a variety of meanings. So now the word that's used here in verse 16, the Hebrew is transliterated into English as Rakiel. It's R-A-K-I-Y-L, and Strong's number 4700. And the definition I'm going to share to you comes from the Complete Word Study Dictionary of the Old Testament by Warren Baker and Eugene Carpenter. And they define it as, quote, a masculine noun referring to gossip. It refers to spreading rumors or falsities about someone. It is always used in a negative manner. Such a practice was prohibited by the Mosaic Law. Wisdom literature condemns it. It entails revealing things that should not be made public. Now, notice in particular that last sentence there of, you know, revealing things that should not be made public. And the reason I mention that is, you know, you could tell from the emphasis of the first part of the definition here. It was focusing on things that are false, you know, when they were just slanders. In other words, they're not really true in the first place. In other words, you know, either just outright lies that have been made up about somebody, or taking a situation and distorting the truth to the point that, you know, you're basically just promoting a falsehood. In other words, the conclusions that you're putting forward because you've distorted what actually took place, you know, is really just tantamount to a lie. Now, oftentimes that's how we think of gossip. But the reason I point out that it also includes sharing things that should not be shared is because oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, this isn't gossip because it's true. Because they think that, you know, because information may be factually true, that somehow shields it from being gossip. And we're going to see as we go through this sermon that's not the case. Again, gossip does certainly include things of, you know, that are just, you know, fabricated falsehoods, or again, things where it was based upon a truth, but you've distorted it to the point that you basically just turned it into a lie. Of sharing those things, that's all, you know, what's being prohibited here is gossip. But let's also notice the second half of the verse here. Now, the way that this is worded in the New King James doesn't really give you a real clear idea of exactly what it's saying. And again, just to read this again, the second half of the verse from the New King James here. It says, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. Now, that's not exactly real clear. And you go, okay, how exactly does that, you know, connect with the first half of the verse? Well, the key to understanding is there's a Hebrew idiom here, you know, kind of a figure of speech in Hebrew that we have to unpack to really understand what it's saying. And once we understand that, you'll see that second half of the verse is directly connected, you know, to the meaning of the first half of the verse. And to clarify this, I'd like to quote from Hebrew scholar Nehemiah Gordon. You've probably heard me mention him in a number of my sermons if you've listened to much of my sermons over the years. You know, as I mentioned in previous sermons, he's a Karaite Jew. What that means is, you know, he's not a rabbinical Jew that, you know, believes in the rabbinical law. He's someone that just follows the Old Testament, but doesn't accept, you know, the New Testament as scripture as we in Christianity do. But he is an expert in Hebrew, and oftentimes it can be helpful in clarifying, you know, what Hebrew, you know, words and phrases are getting at. And where I'd like to quote from is from a transcript of a discussion he had with several other individuals, you know, specifically giving commentary on Leviticus 19. And the section I'm going to read to you is his direct commentary specifically about verse 16, and particularly the second half of the verse. Says, quote, the second half literally says, don't stand by the blood of your neighbor or your fellow. That's a Hebrew idiom that means don't stand by idly and do nothing while you see someone else being harmed. That is, while you see their blood being spilled. So we're actually commanded here not to take a stance of inaction, but to actually take action when you see someone's blood being spilled. Then in a figurative sense, this connects to the first half of the verse, which is going about as a talebearer among your people. When you go about gossiping about somebody, that's figuratively spilling his blood. So don't stand by the blood of your neighbor also means don't stand by idly when someone is gossiping. There's a literal blood and there's a figurative blood. So what you can see here is the instruction that Moses is giving us here from God. You know, it's not just the instruction of, you know, don't actively be a talebearer, you know, who's out, you know, slandering other people. It's take an active stance when you see others doing that. In other words, don't just sit back and, you know, and soak it up and listen to it and encourage them to engage in this behavior. You know, voice objection to it. Or just simply get away from that individual if they don't, you know, they won't stop this behavior. In other words, take an active stance against it is what he's getting at. Now, as I mentioned before, when I was, you know, reading the definition of the Hebrew word there as talebearer in Leviticus 19. I mentioned that, you know, the first half of the definition, you know, focused on something that's just completely false. But the latter part of it also mentioned, you know, not sharing something that should be kept secret. And the reason I pointed that out is again, I mentioned, you know, in human nature, oftentimes we think of, well, this isn't gossip because it's true. Because we think that, you know, if something is factually true, well that excuses us, you know, and now we're allowed to gossip about it. Well, that's not the case. Because turn over to Proverbs chapter 11 here. And notice here how it tells us that one of the things a talebearer does is share secrets. You know, share things that, in other words, that were told with them in confidence. You know, things that they were, you know, that they, when they received the information, the understanding was they were going to keep their mouth shut, you know, and not go blabbing it to everybody else. You know, but they wind up, you know, running around because they think it's hot gossip, you know, and they want to share it with everybody that'll listen. And notice this in Proverbs 11 in verse 13. It says, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. And then, and in other words, you know, a person who's behaving in a godly manner, they keep their mouth shut. You know, they keep the matter private because they know that that was the intention, you know, when the person told them, you know, this information. And again, it may be factually true, but that doesn't excuse us, you know, sharing things that we shouldn't share with others. And just so you see this in greater detail, let me share with you the meaning of the Hebrew word here that's translated as secret. Because, you know, the word for talebearer, you know, that's the same word that we covered in Leviticus 19. But just notice here, again, the definition of the word for secret. This is transliterated into English as sod, S-O-D. It's Strong's number 5475. And again, the definition I'm going to read to you comes from Baker and Carpenter. And they define it as, quote, a masculine noun meaning counsel. Confidentiality is at the heart of this term. According to Proverbs 25, verse 9, information shared in confidence should remain confidential. Yet gossip makes it difficult to do this. Elsewhere, this term reflects a more general meaning of counsel, which is viewed as essential to successful planning. And the point I want you to see in this is, again, just because something may be factually true, you know, doesn't excuse us. You know, we can't fall into that excuse of, well, this isn't gossip because it's true. Because that's not really the question to be asking. The question is, you know, is this something that's appropriate to be shared? You know, was I told this information in confidence, you know, and the person who shared it with me, you know, requested that it not be, you know, that it not be blabbed to the world. You know, maybe they considered it, you know, something personal, you know, maybe it would be embarrassing to them or just something that was sensitive to, you know, to that person for one reason or another. And they simply requested that it not be shared. And see, one of the prohibitions of being a talebearer here is, again, just keeping our mouth shut and not sharing those things. And you might have noticed as I read through the definition there, it referred to Proverbs 25 and verse 9. So let's just take a look at that and see another important principle here in referring to gossip. It's Proverbs 25. We'll actually start reading in verse 8. says, do not hastily go to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? Debate your case with your neighbor himself. Do not disclose the secret to another. And again, this is the same Hebrew word for secret. Lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined. Because see, what it's also illustrating here is another important principle. Because notice it says if you have an issue with another individual, go to that person and try to work it out with him rather than sharing it with everyone else. Because what so often happens with human nature is what's one of the tendencies we tend to fall into as carnal humans. We have a beef with another person, and instead of going to that individual, you know, and addressing, you know, whatever grievance or beef we have with that individual, instead we share it with everybody else, you know, except that person. You know, and the only person who can work out that dispute, or, I mean, you'll solve whatever it is our grievance is about, is the person we have the grievance with. But instead, you know, our human nature, we tend to follow, you know, to engage in gossip, which really just winds up not helping the matter at all, making things worse, and then just, you know, can damage our own reputation, you know, damage us personally, or damage the reputation of the other individual. You know, and this is what we're told, this is just not wise behavior and something we should avoid being a part of. But the Bible also tells us that we should personally avoid people who engage in divulging secrets that they shouldn't divulge. And to see this, turn over to Proverbs 20, and we'll read verse 19. It's Proverbs 20 and verse 19. See, he who goes about as a talebearer, and again, that's the same Hebrew word here that we, you know, covered in Leviticus 19 for talebearer, and we'll see later in the sermon there's two other Hebrew words that we'll cover that are also translated as talebearer, but this one is the same. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. And again, this is the same Hebrew word for secrets. But notice the second half of the verse. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. Now, again, this is another case where the New King James translation of this doesn't really give us a clear picture of exactly, you know, what this verse is getting at. Because, you know, it talks about one who flatters with his lips. Now, if you're like me, when I think about, you know, someone who flatters with their lips, you generally tend to think of someone who's just overly complimentary to someone else, you know, in an insincere manner because they're kind of trying to butter them up because they have a personal agenda. You know, they're trying to get on their good side, you know, because they got some agenda that they have that's motivating their behavior. That's oftentimes how we think of someone who's just overly flattery. Well, that's really not what this verse is getting at. Now, to give you a clearer translation of this verse, I'd like to read to you verse 19 from the Common English Bible. And here's how they translate it. Gossips reveal secrets. Don't associate with those who talk too much. In other words, what it's saying is, if you notice an individual who has a, you know, a track record of, you know, wanting to reveal everybody's secrets to you, you know, they want to tell you all about the, you know, what other people told them in confidence, and they want to give you the latest hot gossip, that's somebody to avoid. Again, as we can see from, you know, what Moses told us in Leviticus 19, again, we should you know, voice objection to this. We should, you know, take an active stand, you know, and let a person know, you know, you shouldn't be sharing this kind of stuff with me. If someone told you this in confidence and they wanted it to remain confident, this is inappropriate. I don't want to hear this. Don't be sharing this with me. And if this individual, you know, continues to engage in this behavior, don't associate with them. Because also think of it from a common sense point of view. You know, if you've heard a lot of my sermons, you probably know one of my favorite sayings is the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Well, apply that to this situation. if you know an individual and they're oftentimes, you know, coming to you, revealing what you know from the conversation is something that was, you know, told to them in secret, you know, with an understanding of confidentiality, but they're breaching this confidentiality and they're always coming to you and wanting to share this. Well, guess what they're doing with the things that you share with them? You know, that you're asking them, you know, not to blab to everybody else. I mean, you're seeing in action, you know, basically a commercial for how they're going to behave when you're not looking and what they're going to do behind your back. So the wise thing to do is once you see someone who has a track record for this, stop associating with them. Basically, voice your objection, you know, to this behavior. And if they're not willing to change this behavior, well, then distance yourself from them. Again, it's just for your own protection. And see, another thing that we need to be aware of, again, just an idiosyncrasy of human nature, is that gossip can be enticing. Because if you just think about, you know, oftentimes, you know, just today, if you go to like a magazine rack, you know, in like a bookstore or something, or even see sites online, well, what you'll oftentimes see is, you know, publications that are dedicated to gossip. You know, there's organizations like TMZ that we have in the U.S. If you're not in the U.S., you may not be as familiar with them, but that's an organization that's basically just dedicated to celebrity gossip. You know, and they're always trying to, you know, give you the latest details about some celebrity. You know, but it's typically not, well, you know, look at this individual, they've got a wonderful marriage, and look how successful their kids have gone, and, you know, what a good example they set. That's not what they want to tell you about. They want to tell you about the affair that this person's engaging in, or, you know, some secret sin that they have, and try to expose all of this. One of the reasons why these kind of sites are popular is because gossip can be very enticing to human nature. In fact, we're going to see that the Bible refers to it as tasty trifles. It's a term the Old Testament uses. And again, that's not necessarily a term we use in everyday terminology today. But just think of it in terms of like your favorite snack or dessert. I mean, just to share something personal, for me, one of the things I tend to like is chocolate, you know, or things that are covered in chocolate. You know, you can get like chocolate covered raisins or chocolate covered dried cranberries or chocolate covered nuts or something. And I have to be careful if I get something like that, because if I get a big bag of it, you know, it just kind of becomes addictive. And I'll just wipe the whole thing out, you know, before I've even thought much about it, you know, because it's just so enticing. You can't stop eating it. Well, what the Bible tells us is that that's kind of how gossip works to our carnal human nature. If we're not guarding ourselves in this regard, we tend to get sucked into gossip, you know, because our human nature just finds it enticing. And to see that, turn over to Proverbs chapter 18. It's Proverbs chapter 18 in verse 8. So the words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles. In other words, they're like our favorite dessert. And they go down into the inmost body. Now, another thing that we can learn from this verse, you know, is, as I mentioned previously in the sermon, you know, there are three different Hebrew words that are all translated into English, at least in my New King James, as the word talebearer. Now, in this case, the Hebrew word that's translated as talebearer is transliterated into English as Ragan. It's R-A-G-A-N. It's Strong's number 7279. And again, the definition I'm going to read to you comes from Baker and Carpenter. They define it as, quote, a verb meaning to gossip, to complain. It refers to Israel's complaining, murmuring in the wilderness against the Lord. It indicates excessive complaining in a way that evokes relational problems among persons. It means a gossiper, a whisperer, a trouble causer. It describes an act of criticism, complaining, fault finding. Now notice that the definition of this one didn't say anything about, you know, it being necessarily, you know, false, slanderous information. Because, you know, again, we oftentimes, again, as I mentioned before, think of gossip in terms of, you know, just things that are just lies and then are false. Because you'll oftentimes hear people say, well, you know, this isn't gossip because this is true. You know, well, notice that this word, you know, these can be totally factual things that are being referred to here. But it refers just like the ancient Israelites just complaining. Well, you know, we won't take the time to go through these, you know, those examples with ancient Israel. But, you know, it's oftentimes what they're griping about is, well, I'm thirsty or I'm hot or I'm hungry, or, you know, or I'm tired of wandering in the wilderness and such. Well, these weren't factually incorrect. You know, it wasn't a matter that they weren't really thirsty and that was a lie, or they weren't really hungry and that was a lie. You know, these were true. They're just always complaining and fault-finding. You know, and always griping about their situation rather than being grateful. See, and what this tells us is that falls under gossip as well. Again, you know, the Bible refers to this as a talebearer, but again, we don't typically use the term talebearer in our day-to-day English today. We oftentimes refer more often to gossip. But a gossip can also be, again, just someone who's constantly finding fault or constantly complaining, you know, about things. That's something that we're supposed to avoid as well. And also turn over to Proverbs 26, because we'll see here this verse basically repeats what we just covered here. But it also uses another different term for the English word talebearer. And this is the way we can cover all three of the terms that are used as, you know, they're translated as talebearer. And this is Proverbs 26:22. Says, the words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. Now, as you can see, this basically says the exact same thing that we just read in Proverbs 18. But in this case, the Hebrew word that's translated as talebearer is transliterated into English as nirgan. It's N-I-R-G-A-N. It's Strong's number 5372. And again, the definition I'm going to read to you comes, again, from Baker and Carpenter. It says, a masculine noun indicating a gossiper, a slanderer. It depicts a person who harms others by attacking them verbally, falsely. It indicates a person who whispers things that will harm others, things that should be kept secret, creating tension and strife. See, once again, we have both the concept of something that's just completely false, you know, that wasn't true in the first place, or again, has been so distorted and misrepresented, you know, that it's basically a lie. You know, it's not only that, it's again including the concept of just sharing something that should be secret, it should be kept confidential, something that was never intended to be shared. You know, so again, we can't use the excuse that, well, this isn't gossip because it's true. Because things that are true can be gossip as well. And again, as we covered previously, they can be very destructive to ourselves and to other people's lives as well. And it's important for us when we look at this subject, you know, because oftentimes, you know, we tend to look at gossiping, you know, even, you know, when we engage in it or justify it ourselves, we look at it as a more minor issue. We don't think of it as a sin that would be equated with like murder or sexual immorality. But in reality, that's how God classifies it. And to see that, turn over to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, and we'll start reading in verse 28. It says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters. And notice the terms whisperers and backbiters. We're going to come back here in a minute to what the, you know, the Greek means here in both of these cases. It's basically terms that we would, you know, refer to today as being gossips. But continuing in verse 30, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. And before we go any further, notice that in verse 32, it just gave us these lists of, you know, these heinous sins. And again, we'll understand in a minute here, whispers and backbiters, what exactly that means. Because again, that's referring to forms of gossip. But notice here, at the end, it referred to not only those who engage in behavior, but those who approve of such things. Again, it's not only those who are actively doing them, but those who tend to facilitate, you know, who kind of passively, you know, facilitate this behavior. That's considered just as wrong. In other words, these are things we have to actively take a stand against. Now, as I mentioned here, it uses the words here in New King James as whisperers and backbiters. Now, what exactly are those referring to here? Now, what we're going to see here is this refers to, you know, slander and gossip. And it's basically the concept of those who do it, you know, kind of discreetly and privately, you know, behind the scenes, behind other people's backs, are those who just do it very blatantly and openly. It's just covering both ends of that is what this is getting at. Now to cover the Greek term here that is translated as whisperers. Now, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Greek term here because I'm sure I'll butcher it, but I'll spell it for you. It's transliterated into English as P-S-I-T-H-U-R-I-S-T-E-S, Strong's number 558. And the definition I'm going to read to you comes from the Complete Word Study Dictionary of the New Testament by Spiro Sahaites. He defines it as, quote, to whisper, a whisperer, a secret slanderer. It is similar to catalos, Strong's number 2637, an accuser, a backbiter who does this, his slandering openly. Because as you'll see here, the word backbiter, you know, that's the word catalos that you just referred to here. And that this is Strong's number 2637. And Zahiades defines this as to speak against, slanderous, a slanderer, backbiter. So what you can see is this is basically referring to, you know, slanderous gossip. Again, whether it's done, you know, very, very quietly in hushed tones behind people's backs and we're more discreet about how we do it, or if we're just, you know, just very outspoken and do it very openly. You know, he's covering both concepts. But what I want you to notice is he puts it, you know, ranks it among murder, among sexual immorality, you know, all manner of evil. He considers it a very serious sin. You know, so this is something we need to take very seriously, you know, when it comes again to taming our tongue and realize when we should shut up, when we should just, you know, not engage in behavior or allow our human nature, you know, to take control of our tongues. And to understand better how to do this, let's also look at some of the pitfalls that cause us to kind of slide into engaging in gossip. Because there's some common pitfalls, you know, that if we're not aware of, you know, that can allow us to, you know, to kind of get sucked into to gossiping type of behavior, of being, you know, either, you know, spreading secrets or just trying to tear other people down, you know, out of our carnal human nature. And if we can kind of be aware of these motivations, we can kind of catch ourselves before we slide into this behavior. And one of them is having envy or pride. In other words, you know, being kind of, you know, in one way or another, jealous of something somebody else has, or just having a desire to exalt ourselves. You know, because sometimes in both of these behaviors, we can find ourselves criticizing or kind of tearing other people down, whether it's just being openly slanderous and just blatantly malicious about it, or if it's, again, just kind of subtly through our human nature, just trying to kind of tear them down in an effort to try to exalt ourselves. Because oftentimes human nature will look at it like that. You know, that if we kind of dig at other people and kind of try to push them down, that somehow we're exalting ourselves. And to see a good example of this, turn over to Numbers chapter 12. We'll see here a situation where Miriam and Aaron both engage in gossip about Moses. But we'll quickly see here that the issue that they're criticizing, you know, Moses over really isn't the real issue for them. That's really not what it's about. Because their real issue is, you know, some underlying envy and jealousy of the role that Moses has in his relationship with God. You know, and they're wanting basically to try to suddenly tear Moses down to exalt themselves. Because, see, in this situation, not only is this, you kind of may see, just group dynamics in terms of envying another person, you know, in their role in the group, these three are also siblings. So I'm sure some sibling rivalry, you know, plays a role in this as well. But let's start off here in Numbers chapter 12 in verse 1. Says that then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. Now it says spoke against there, you know, it really means like to criticize. And in fact, in my New King James, if you look in the margin, you know, there's a little one next to the word spoke against. And in the margin it says criticize. Basically they're criticizing, you know, Moses over this. But pay attention to verse 2, and we'll quickly realize that the marriage is not even really the issue here. You know, the real issue here is, again, some envy and jealousy and pride issues that are motivating their behavior. This is in verse 2, and they said, "Has Jehovah indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And Jehovah heard it. You know, notice here, it's not really about his marriage. You know, that's just a way for them to try to pick at Moses. What their real issue is here is, well, aren't we just as good as him? Because, see, Moses had a more significant role than him. And see, if you stop and look at the roles that they played, it wasn't like they were being ignored, you know, and they didn't have significant roles as well. I mean, Aaron is high priest. I mean, the priesthood throughout all of Israel's history has been, they're the Aaronic priesthood. They're descendants of Aaron. You know, he had a very significant role. The Bible directly tells us that Miriam was a prophetess. You know, it wasn't like they were being neglected and they weren't being utilized as well. No, they were. They were just envious of him, and their own pride was, you know, they want to be in as exalted a role as Moses was in. And see, and if we then just read the rest of this, of how God's correcting them, it becomes very obvious that, again, the marriage issue that they're criticizing over, that wasn't even the real issue at all. You know, the underlying issue was their envy and their pride. That's what was causing them to criticize and to gossip about Moses. So notice here, just pick up in verse 3 here. "Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly Jehovah said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, 'Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting.' So the three came out. And then Jehovah came down in a pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both went forward. And then he said, 'Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, Jehovah, make myself known to him in a vision, and I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of Jehovah. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?'" Notice when God comes to correct them, he doesn't even bring up the marriage issue that they were criticizing him for. because he knew that wasn't even the real issue to begin with. They were just envious of Moses' position. That's what was motivating their gossip. And pick up in verse 9. So the anger of Jehovah was aroused against them, and he departed. And then the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, and suddenly Miriam became leprous as white as snow. And then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. And so Aaron and Moses, Aaron said to Moses, "O my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us, in which you have done foolishly, in which we have sinned. But please do not let her be as one dead, whose face is a half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb." So Moses cried out to Jehovah, saying, "Please heal her, O God, I pray." And then Jehovah said to Moses, "If her father had put spit in her face, would she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and she may be received again." So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey on. Miriam was brought in again. And afterwards the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So you can see here what was motivating their behavior. This wasn't about a marriage. That was just an excuse to find fault with Moses, because what the real issue was is they had envy of Moses' relationship with God, you know, and basically the leadership role that he had in Israel. And they basically were trying to criticize him, to try to kind of tear Moses down to make themselves equal with him. That was what was causing this behavior. And to see another example of this, turn over to 3 John. We'll see here in the New Testament a very similar type of example. This is 3 John, and we'll start reading here in verse 9. It says, "I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. And he who does good is of God, but he who does evil has not seen God." So what you can see here, what's motivating Diotrephes' behavior here is, again, this desire for the preeminence. It's pride. You know, it's a desire to exalt himself over others. You know, and he tries to accomplish this, you know, by gossiping about the apostles and finding fault, trying to tear them down in an effort to try to exalt himself. And to see that, let me share with you the Greek word here that's translated into to preeminence in English. This word is transliterated into English as philoproteo. It's philoproteo. It's Strong's number 5383. And the definition I'm going to read to you comes from the Complete Word Study Dictionary of the New Testament by Spyros Sahaitis. He defines it as, quote, "to be first preeminent, to love to have preeminence." To put this in, you might say, more modern-day terminology, Diotrephes wanted to be the alpha male. You know, he saw himself as someone who should be in the limelight, who should be exalted, and should be in charge. You know, and he wants to exalt himself. So what he does is he engages in, you know, basically gossip towards the apostles. Because notice in verse 10, where it talks about prating against us with malicious words. Now, the Greek word there for prating against is phileo. It's phileo. It's Strong's number 5396. And again, I'm going to read to you a definition from Zahaites. He defines it as, quote, "to overflow with talk, chatter, prattle, to blabber, chatter, talk in the idle, trifling manner against someone, talking idly or falsely, In other words, he's gossiping, he's finding fault, you know, with them. And again, a person can do this, you know, not just from being, you know, directly slanderous and making up lies about someone. They can do this even subtly. You know, if they see that they have an envy for someone else and, you know, again, have that carnal human nature idea that, well, if I kind of just bring other people down, kind of tear them down, it somehow exalts me. What they'll oftentimes do is just, you know, find ways to take subtle jabs, just always kind of, you know, try to find fault and something to just try to pick at somebody, you know, constantly to try to tear them down, to exalt themselves. But the underlying, the motivation that comes from this, as I mentioned, is an envy and a pride. You know, so we find ourselves at times, you know, just, you know, trying to always find fault with other people, you know, even when we're just having to be nitpicky about it. We need to ask ourselves, where is that coming from? You know, because is that really what this is about? Or is this about my own pride, my own desire to be exalted? And am I carnally thinking that if I kind of tear other people down, that somehow exalts myself? Because oftentimes what that does is it accomplishes the exact opposite. You know, because other people will see us not as, you know, in a more exalted position. If they see you as the person who's always the fault finder, you know, what happens is people just get annoyed by that and they see you as less, you know, and it doesn't wind up making you look stronger in their eyes. It eventually makes them annoyed and not want to be around you. And it just kind of accomplishes the opposite. And another common way that we can find ourselves kind of falling into gossip is if we're trying to use it, you know, if we're talking about other people or criticizing or complaining constantly to kind of fill a void in our life. And to see an example with that, turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 5. So 1 Timothy chapter 5. So we'll see here the Bible uses a couple of examples of where people wind up engaging in gossip. We're really just out of an effort to fill a void in their life rather than finding something more productive to do with their energy to fill that void. And to see an example of this, just start reading here in 1 Timothy 5 in verse 11. It says, "But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things that they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity for the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan." Because notice how he talks about being idle, you know, and then falling into being, you know, a gossip and a busybody. You know, this is someone who's basically trying to fill a void in their life by meddling in everyone else's business, you know, and finding fault with others. Because notice here how Paul says, you know, what they should be doing instead, get married, raise children, you know, which it basically the concept being, you know, focus your energy on something productive. You know, find something productive and helpful to do rather than trying to fill that void by being a busybody and wind up engaging in destructive behavior to other people's inner selves. And to see another time where Paul addresses this, turn over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. It's 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And we'll see here again where, you know, being idle, you know, having kind of an empty void in our lives can wind up falling into the pitfall of gossiping about other people. And this is starting in verse 6. "But we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly and not according to the tradition which you have received from us." Now, if we keep reading through this, we'll see what he means by being disorderly. It's just basically being lazy, you know, and not working when you're capable of working. In verse 7, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, For we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but work with labor, toil, night and day, that we might not be a burden on any of you. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. Notice he's working to support himself is basically what he's referring to here. Because again, being disorderly is being lazy and not working. In verse 10, for even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. And in other words, instead of finding something gainful to do and be productive where they can support themselves, they're filling that void by being a busybody in other people's lives. And pick up in verse 12. Now those who are such we command and exhort that through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good. And if anyone does not obey a word in this epistle, note that person and do not keep company with them, that they may be ashamed. Yet do not count on him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. So once again, we see the instructions. You know, when the Bible addresses this issue of engaging in gossip, it's not just the issue of telling us not to actively engage in it ourselves. It also repeatedly commands us not to facilitate this behavior or enable this behavior in other people. In other words, if someone's coming to you constantly with gossip, you know, voice an objection to it. You know, I mean, you know, try to be tactful and nice about it to reach that person, but voice the fact that you think this is inappropriate and you don't want to engage in this behavior. If they're wanting to share with you, you know, things that you know or something that someone else shared with them in confidence, you know, that it's a secret that they shouldn't be sharing. Tell them you don't appreciate them doing this and you don't want to hear it. You know, and again, if they won't stop engaging in this, as you can see, you know, we've read repeated instructions throughout the Bible, then what you do is you distance yourself from that person. Again, you get away from facilitating that behavior. Because see, what we always want to remember is that God uses a scale when it comes to judging us. He basically describes it as with the same measure we use, he will measure back to us. You know, so we don't want to be involved in gossiping or, you know, tearing down other people, inappropriately criticizing them and such, because we don't want to be treated that way ourselves. And again, God directly tells us he's going to measure back to us, you know, how we treat other people. And to see that, turn over to Matthew chapter 7. So Matthew chapter 7. And we'll start reading in verse 1. It says, judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Why do you look at the speck of your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say it to your brother, let me remove the speck out of your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye. Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, then you will be able to clearly see to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, or cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their foot and turn the tear to you in pieces. See, the thing to think about when we have that desire, that urge to share gospel, to be overly critical and fault-finding of others is, do I want other people talking about me like that? You know, do I want people sharing, you know, my most embarrassing moments? You know, or constantly bringing up, you know, the things I've done in my past that I'd really rather people forget about. You know, I'd really rather just put behind me and, you know, and leave that in the past and be able to change my life. You know, we always need to think about how would I want to be treated if I was on the other side, on the other end of this. Because see, if we stop and frame it in that manner, that can cause us to pause before we shoot our mouths off. You know, before we start sharing things or being critical or saying things about other people that we wouldn't want said about ourselves. Because we also have to keep in mind that God directly tells us we're going to have to give an account for every word that we say. And to see that, turn over to Matthew chapter 12. It's Matthew chapter 12 and verse 33. It says, "Either make the tree good or its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things, and out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks? A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that every idle word men speak, they will give an account of in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." So see, when you stop and think of it in terms of I'm going to get judged, you know, for everything I let come out of my mouth. Now, if that's not a motivator to put a guard over our mouths, I don't know what is. You know, because we all need to stop and think about that again. How would I feel on the receiving end if I was on the other end of this? Because if we stop and think about it in that context, that could cause us to pause before we allow ourselves to slip into the behavior of engaging in gossip. And as I mentioned also in the sermon, it's also, again, helpful for us to, when we find ourselves wanting to be critical of other people, or wanting to, you know, we have that, we see that tendency in ourselves to want to tear other people down, stop and ask ourselves, you know, is that really what this is about? Or do I just have a desire to, you know, to fill a void in my life? Or do I have a just pride that I want to exalt myself? You know, or I want to try to look good in front of others? Because if we stop and question those motives, you know, then we can understand ourselves and catch ourselves, you know, not falling into that behavior. But as also mentioned throughout this sermon, when it comes to gossip, it's not just a biblical instruction for us to not engage in the behavior. We're also commanded to actively take a stand against it. In other words, when other people come to us with gossip, you know, it's our responsibility to tell them, you know, no, this is not appropriate. You know, again, we shouldn't be engaging this in behavior. And I don't want you coming to me, you know, and sharing this. And I don't want you sharing, you know, other people's, you know, secrets with me that they told you in confidence. If it was told to you in confidence, let it stay in confidence. And see, if we take that, you know, type of behavior, not only can we guard our own mouths, you know, from being able to, you know, from engaging in sin and falling into the sin of gossip, but if we take an active stand against it to resist that, we can also help our brothers, you know, our fellow Christians, in not engaging in gossip as well.